Do you ever think about the future? Of course you do. We all do. But cultural critic Chuck Klosterman takes thinking about the future to a whole new level. For example, he's thinking about stuff like which rock and roller people will still know 500 years from now. And will our understanding of gravity change sometime in the future? Klosterman explores all this, and more, in his new book, But What If We're Wrong? Thinking about the present as if it were the past. Klosterman is the best-selling author of 7 books, including Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs, and I Wear the Black Hat. He's also written 2 novels, and you might remember him from his 3-year stint as the ethicist for the New York Times magazine. He became interested in the idea of trying to predict what the future will be like while he was watching the reboot of the science TV series Cosmos.
I was very intrigued by any time they would point to sort of a lost, arcane scientist and elaborate sort of on how everyone in the world sort of had this established idea of what reality was, and then somebody offered a new idea, and within one generation it was as if everyone had always believed that. And I thought to myself, well, that must be happening all the time. It's probably not visible to us because we're inside the system, but there must just be this continual process of reinventing how we view the world. And once it gets reinvented, we almost pretend that there was never another version. And coincidentally, when I was watching this, I happened to be reading about the history of the novel Moby Dick and sort of how it was delivered by Herman Melville as this masterwork, but then got very mixed reviews and did not sell a lot of copies and kind of ruined his life. And it wasn't until after World War I that there was a reevaluation of it, not just as like a good book, but as the book. So the first example was objective. It was these ideas about science. And the second idea was subjective, how we view art. But in both cases, it just seems as though we are never really right about what the world is like until we get past the present day. So I just decided to try to look at popular culture as if it was history and try to visualize how this period of time will seem to someone in 100 or 300 or even 1,000 years.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit about music and more specifically the idea of success. Who is the most successful American musician of all time?
Well, I assert it's John Philip Sousa. The reason I see him as the most successful American musician is because now, if you discuss the idea of marching music, which is not popular music, but it's still part of the popular world. You hear it on the 4th of July and at football games and, you know, at the circus or whatever. It's a music all people can identify. And if you were trying to describe it to someone, even in 2 or 3 sentences, you would reference John Philip Sousa. He is as identifiable as the music itself. He has almost become the concept. And to me, that's really what success at something is, when you as a person and what you did become intertwined in a way that's just, you know, can't be separate. So that kind of raises interesting questions about other genres of music. I mean, it feels to me as if rock music is receding from the culture. Now, it doesn't mean it's dying. It'll always exist in the same way jazz will always exist, and there'll always be some people sort of practicing any form of music once it kind of becomes into being. But it'll move away from the center of the culture, further and further from the center, until it's like a fringe thing. And then eventually it's an academic pursuit. Say in 300 years, rock music will be something people will learn about in a class. And then the question becomes, when that teacher in 300 years is trying to describe what rock music is, what will they use as the example?
Yeah.
Who will be the John Philip Sousa of rock music?
Yeah. The obvious answer to my mind seems it would be the Beatles.
Well, the Beatles are the obvious answer in a rational world. Like, all logic points to them, okay? But I don't believe the world is rational. I don't think it operates in a rational way. I think that we basically create the world in a chaotic sense as we go along, we being people in general. And then we look back on it and sort of knit it into a reasonable, logical, almost like a novel. It's like, I think people have said this before, that, you know, in your own life, every moment feels like chaos, but when you look back on your life, it seems like it was a perfectly constructed plan. We do this with history.
Yeah.
So I think what may happen is that in the future, rock music might be remembered as, like, for lack of a better term, like a collection of tropes. there are just certain things people understand about music, that it's a rhythm-based simple music, and that it was black music kind of adopted and mainstreamed by white people, and that it comes from the South, and that it has a sexual element to it, and it has an outlaw element to it, all of these things. And they'll take these qualities and they'll say, like, okay, well, who's the person who fits this mythical suit we've created? And that suit perfectly fits Chuck Berry. And sometimes I wonder if perhaps the Beatles, despite being the most important rock group during the rock era, if maybe a singular individual like Chuck Berry will become the definition later on. Like, it's easier for people to remember one person than a group of people.
Yeah, that's a good point. It makes for a cleaner narrative, the whole Joseph Campbell, the hero's journey thing.
Yes.
And it's appropriate because many do say that Chuck Berry is the father of rock and roll, and clearly he was an influence on the Beatles. You can hear that influence, especially in their early music, and they covered Chuck Berry's songs, so that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. So it would satisfy the kind of academic specialist as well. And in the future, that person becomes more important.
Yeah, but does it make too much sense, Chuck? Getting back to your idea of, you know, the world being irrational, is that too cut and dried?
Probably. Like, another thing that I sort of speculate in this book is just this possibility that, well, maybe the memory of rock will simply be an attachment to something else, an ancillary medium. So perhaps the thing that people really remember about art in the late 20th century is television. Television becomes sort of the one art future generations really care about. And if they care about television, they might care about, and they probably will care about, the idea of the second golden era of television, which we're still in, okay, and which began kind of with The Sopranos in the late 90s.
Yeah.
So if you really care about The Sopranos and you decide The Sopranos are a really important thing, something that's worth academic study, you're really going to care about every detail, particularly in the most memorable episodes. The most memorable episode of The Sopranos is the last one, and the last scene of that is pretty much a depiction of the Sopranos family with very little dialogue, soundtracked by Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Yeah.
You know, so could Don't Stop Believing become sort of the cliche caricature of what rock was simply because it was part of a television show and we care about the television show?
Yeah, so Journey, potentially in the irrational world in which we live, and if the world continues to be irrational 3 centuries from now, yeah, maybe Journey is the John Philip Sousa of rock.
I know, and that seems so crazy to say it like that because we've been so socialized to believe that John Philip Sousa is also the best answer.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. The John Philip Sousa of rock is probably not going to be Kiss because they didn't die in a boating mishap the week their debut album hit stores in 74. I'm talking, of course, as you know, about that Grantland story that you wrote where you proposed that if Kiss had died in this boating mishap just after their debut album came out in 74, the very same people who hate them would insist their debut album is a forgotten progenitor of punk on par with the Stooges.
They wouldn't have even needed to die. Let's say they would have just made one record or two records and broken up, okay?
Yeah.
And let's say it's the New York Dolls who go on for 40 years and become the most, like, commercialized band. Then all the people who hate Kiss hate the New York Dolls and say, like, the New York Dolls are awful. You know, they're, like, just some sort of commercialized facsimile of Kiss. Yeah.
So if the odds are that we are wrong when we try to make these predictions about the future, why does engaging in these thought experiments matter? What's the point of doing it?
Well, you know, all I got to say to that is that's a dangerous road to go down if you start applying it to everything. If you start saying that everything that we're going to do intellectually or culturally has to have a positive benefit, we're going to be living a much different world. I just think it's interesting. And to me, that's enough.
Yeah.
And I know that you're interested in this too. I wasn't trying to be adversarial.
No,
I'm just saying that if somebody says to me, it's like, why do we care if people in 500 years don't care about the Beatles, but, you know, they care about, you know, Veruca Salt or something. That becomes the band everyone remembers. What difference does it make to you? Well, it's like it doesn't make a difference. But here's the thing. One, it's fascinating that happened. And maybe it's somewhat humbling that we could have misunderstood something that people in the future will understand better than us. I mean, I like the idea that reality is confusing.
Yeah, yeah, it's messy. And yeah, and that's why Philip K. Dick is one of my favorite authors, because that's the central question he's always exploring. What is reality?
Yeah, Philip K. Dick is also a great example of somebody who matters more now than he did in his life.
Yeah.
You know, the content of his books, at times, I mean, his writing can be up and down, but his ideas are amazing, and that's what lasts. People don't care about the prose he wrote as much as the idea behind it.
Yeah. Also, just getting back to why this is fun to do, why it's good to try and predict the future, is you talk about humility and wonder. There's a sense of wonder, and it makes us realize, and you alluded to it before, about where our place is in the grand scheme of things. It kind of puts us in our place. Would that be fair to say?
Well, I mean, there's just a lot of certitude now. I mean, we've kind of moved culturally in a strange direction with the rise of the internet, that there seems to be a belief that if you want people to think that you're intelligent, the way to do it is by demanding that you are right and that you're totally inflexible about it, and anybody who disagrees with you is just a fool. And that just seems to me the opposite of what an intelligent person does. And an intelligent person admits that they don't know everything. They just have this one idea. And like, what do you think of that idea?
Yeah, well said. Looking ahead 300 years, how do you think you, Chuck Klosterman, will be remembered? Maybe as the John Philip Sousa of popular culture criticism? Do you think that's a possibility?
Obviously, you write a book like this, you get asked that question. You know, people say like, well, what about this book? And what about you? You know, I guess I think that I will be remembered for as long as I keep writing books. And then when I stop writing books, I will be forgotten. I will die. And there'll be maybe 48 hours where people will discuss who I was. And that will be it.
I think you're selling yourself short.
I think I'm selling myself realistically.
But in an irrational world, and you know,
things like legacy, that's something you think about when you're young and you haven't done anything, because you think to yourself, I could do great things, I could have a legacy. And now, like, I'm 44, I'm in the middle of my life, I feel good about the work I'm doing, but I don't think it's gonna last. I just don't.
Yeah, I get that. But I disagree, because I think you're being modest about your work, and especially this book, because of what this book is about, it gives you staying power. Like 200, 300 years from now, someone's going to come across it and say, holy cow.
If I get one thing really right in this book, that could happen.
Yeah.
If the things I say about gravity end up being true, somebody will be in the future might be like, this guy wrote about this, you know, all these years ago.
Yeah, you might get a star named after you or something like Klosterman. If there's some new understanding of gravity, it could be the Klosterman principle, law of gravity or something.
Okay, but here's a good question. Who was the most important popular culture writer of the 50s?
Ooh, I was going to say Lester Bangs, but he's rock and roll, and plus he's 70s and 80s.
Exactly. I don't have an answer. I do this for a living. I have no answer to that question. If you'd asked me, I'd be like, no idea. Granted, popular culture wasn't really something people discussed in the 50s in the way we do now. It would be harder. But that's not that long ago. In this book, when I interviewed Jonathan Lethem at one point, I'm not going to say exactly what he said because it involves profanity, but he basically said, like, time is coming for all of us, and it's going to get everyone. Unless you're like Shakespeare or Homer, you can't live your life trying to live forever. It'll never work.
Well, yeah, but maybe if Ray Kurzweil does pull it off and lives forever, then after you die, I'm sure he's a Klosterman fan, and he's got to be of this book anyway, and then he'll bring it back, you know, he'll revive it, and it'll be like the Moby Dick of nonfiction, the great American nonfiction.
Well, I'll tell you what then, this radio interview is going to be just as memorable, because here you are actually stating what's going to happen. So put this in a time capsule.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. This was great. It was great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
I loved it.
Chuck Klosterman is the author of But What If We're Wrong? Thinking about the present as if it were the past. Keep an eye and an ear out for an extended version of our conversation with Klosterman, including his mind-bending thoughts about gravity, on our podcast feed. You'll find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you download your favorite podcasts.